This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Sometimes the safest place is the most dangerous. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
Lori Vallow Daybell, she was in court not that long ago, acting as her own attorney, which is, well, humorous in a horrible, horrible, dark way, because ultimately we are talking about the murder of two innocent children, the likely murder of other spouses, of former spouses, and really anyone that got in the way of Lori Vallow Daybell as she went on her mission of, I don't know, divine insanity, I guess. Streaming discussion, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. Your reaction to Lori in court the other day and Lori's attempt at playing attorney.
Yeah. Well, she obviously has a competent, active advisory council, you know, kind of walking her through the steps. She was very assertive. She was cogent, which actually didn't surprise me because Lori, even though she's been diagnosed with delusional disorder, and we've certainly seen a lot of evidence of that in her previous trial testimony. Mm-hmm. So we can say Lori's crazy, but at the same time, she can play normal in a certain context. And she was a podcaster. She can give, you know, a story, her version of reality. And she can do so in small increments over short periods of time. But if she ever veers into religion, that's when you see the crazy jump out.
Well, she veered into the Constitution in her hearing the other day. And we'll play that back. Let's take a look at kind of her opening statements and her initial debut as an attorney. Let's go there.
So the state has claimed in their response that these documents are not material in the case. And this defense is entitled to this specific evidence for the proposition that this evidence can be used to impeach the thoroughness and good faith of the police investigation and the intent of the prosecution. That's Kyles versus Whitley, 514 U.S. The acid test of this prosecution is not a matter of determining if the defendant is guilty of the crimes that the defendant is charged, but rather, was any crime even committed? And where is this evidence? This defense has yet to find any evidence of a conspiracy in the 100,939 pages that have been turned over by the state. The state does not get to say, like they did in their last motion to us, in their last answer, to say, oh, we gave you over 100,000 pages, so that ought to keep you busy. That's not how it works. These are serious charges, and these are serious consequences for these charges. In determining the actuality of a crime, the state is required to meet, in reality, not in theory, a standard of culpability that is defined by law as a crime. The state is required to meet the challenge of defense reasonably without bias, conflict, prejudice, or speculation. So the defense, we keep filing motions for discovery since we don't know if it's some kind of strategy of the state that they're holding back this actual evidence of conspiracy in hopes that what, the defendant won't have time to prepare a proper defense against the evidence that comes forward at the last minute. This court has denied every motion the defense has filed to acquire this evidence. The state has claimed in their response to the defense's motion that the defense's request is overbroad and wide-sweeping. Is this the defense left to pinpoint where this evidence is and try to find it? No, that is not the law. The state is required by law to give the defense evidence of the crime they are being charged with. This is the purpose of the Brady Law and the right to due process. This is why in 2020, the United States enacted the Due Process Protection Act that provides defendants like me with greater protection, Brady versus Maryland. The state has continued to impede the defense from conducting a defense. This is a violation of the 14th Amendment of our great Constitution and the defense's due process rights. Today, the defense is requesting that this court do the following three things. One, order the state to turn over all evidence of a conspiracy since our trial begins in 76 days from today. I would also ask that they would pare down their witness list to these witnesses that will actually be testifying so the defense can conduct productive interviews. And then I would like for all motions and responses to be sent directly to the defendant in a timely manner. I'm having a really hard time getting this stuff. I don't get it from ILS to 7 days after things have been filed, after your orders have been rendered. I'm not getting these. This defense intends on starting trial on time without delay, and I request that also that this defense requests that the court grant the motion to order the state to produce all discovery of extradition at this time so that we can get started on getting prepared for trial.
Kind of like legal Mad Lib. It's like, here's the general format you're supposed to follow and you fill in the rest. And mm-hmm. as if a third grader did it. What's your reaction to that?
A lot of emotional intensity there too with her. And I kept thinking that this is going to be really interesting with this amount of intense feeling and this kind of entitlement that she's got. Watching her question witnesses will be really interesting.
Do you think this is going to work? I mean, is this going to actually make it to trial? I mean, this was a very clumsy beginning. I don't know. At some point you go, this is not, but I, you know, they've already deemed she can do it. So.
Yeah. And we have seen some very bad examples of ridiculous situations in court where people have been allowed to act as their own attorney and, you know, the court allows it. So it's my guess it will continue to move forward and we'll all be tuned in.
This might take the cake. I mean, as one of the most compelling crazy people to represent themselves. Here's how the judge reacted to all of that just the other day.
What does anything in the extradition have to do with the underlying charges? Can you tell me that?
Yeah, it's to find out why all this started when I can't find any evidence that there is.
So, have you read the grand jury transcripts?
I have.
Okay. The grand jury transcripts summarize what the state's evidence they intend to produce at trial.
I understand that.
So when you say you can't find anything, that is the summary in the grand jury transcripts?
Correct.
Okay. So I guess I don't understand how an extradition a year or so after the fact, after the indictments, would have anything to do with the underlying charges. So can you articulate that for me?
What is she trying to do? I mean, she makes no sense with what she's arguing. No. It's just a bunch of word salad going out there that really doesn't pertain to anything. She goes, I find no evidence of, like, you have a grand jury indictment in front of. I mean, is she not processing that she's on trial for murder? I mean, what do you think is going through her mind that would elicit these just utterly clueless reactions?
Yeah, she seems to, again, not see what's right in front of her when it doesn't fit her version of reality. You know, she, you know, could look at the grand jury report and she doesn't see it. I don't see it, even though she'll tell the judge, sure, I know that it exists, but there's no integrating reality with her. I thought the judge was very patient considering the nonsense.
Here's a little more nonsense from her hearing the other day, more back and forth with the court. And
Your Honor. There's the detectives that are on these cases are all continuing to go back and forth with all of these different agencies. You have the FBI, you have all the different agencies that are working together. You have Rexburg, Fremont County, you have Chandler and Gilbert, you have all these people. Then I have them coming up, and they're going to be on the stand, and they're going to be in trial, and they're going to be saying what they reviewed. They've reviewed all these things, and there's communications between all of these agencies that I feel like that the defense is privy to. We should be able to have that and look at that and see where all this came from, where all this started, why they waited 2 years to make these charges. There's all these things. And why they decided to extradite when I saw someone sent me a news article 3 days before I got brought to Arizona that MCAO was putting out a release that they were not going to pick me up and they were not going to extradite me to Arizona until after my appeals were finished. So it's contradictory to that. I just don't know where it came from. And there's a lot of things that are mystery questions to the defense that we are entitled to according to the law.
All right. Well, everything you've just told me, none of that would be relevant in the trial, in the case in chief. Does the state intend on producing any iota of evidence or presenting any scintilla of evidence of anything that happened after the dates of crime of that have been charged in the indictments?
The state, although there is information that occurred after that that will relate to the conspiracy that has been disclosed to the defense, anything that occurred after the indictment, during the extradition process, is completely irrelevant and will not be brought in during the trial.
I didn't mean the date of crime of listed in the indictment. I meant the date of the indictment. Correct. So the state doesn't plan on presenting any evidence to a jury of anything after the indictment?
Correct.
So how would that, anything to do with the extradition, be relevant to your trial then?
I feel like it's relevant to the whole, Your Honor, in the sense that the police investigation and the intent of the prosecution, it doesn't make sense. I would like to be able to have that.
How is this going to go to, I mean, yeah. She can't have a concept of the basic things here.
Yeah.
Of what's going on.
Yeah. And it also, I think, gives a hint that the theme of everyone's out to get her and there's a conspiracy going on, that's already where, you know, her story is set on that. And so I would imagine we'll see more of that kind of theme.
I mean, is the bar too low for competency, in your opinion, for who's going to trial and representing themselves? Because this has really seemed, this almost gets into like cruel territory where it's comically horrible. The person obviously not capable of understanding reality or representing themselves. Should this be reevaluated where we say, yes, you're competent? I know it's state by state. Some states don't even have it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's far too low. And, you know, when she was deemed incompetent to stand trial for a significant period of time in the past, that you have to be really ill to, you know, be deemed incompetent. So I don't think that this is going to be a good idea. It's going to waste a lot of time. And yeah, we're just in for a circus.
And she goes in and out of it because there's been times where, okay, she's okay to stand trial. Then all of a sudden, no, she's not okay to stand trial. Then she is again. I mean, she goes back and forth with it being, I mean, I would not be surprised if we see another delay here. With someone like this, I mean, is there any stress there anymore? I mean, she's already in jail for the rest of her life, or prison for the rest of her life for the murder of the kids. This is just going to add more icing to the cake and check her box as a murderer to more people. Is she, you know, would the anticipation of this, would that, or could that cause whatever is going in her mind to spark to a level where they're going to have to go, yeah, you're not competent again, and then it kind of comes down. I'm wondering if that, the anticipations of the trials and the accusations that are going to be thrown at her publicly in court, if that kind of pushes her over the ledge and then she kind of comes back.
That's a really good point, is that these symptoms ebb and flow, and stress does have a lot to do with people becoming more symptomatic. And I would imagine having to listen to the gruesome testimony and the disturbing kinds of things that is going to be presented, that will be a stress on her.
Is she recognizing what's being said in those moments, though? I mean, is she blocking it out? Because she seems to somehow flow through it and then justify it in her mind as, you know, some biblical plan, and you'll all see it in the end when I'm the Queen of Rexburg. I just don't know the answer to that. And I don't think really anybody does. And there's some folks are in the camp still that, oh, she's acting here. Do you think she is acting?
I think she's got a version of reality. And as you say, she filters reality mm-hmm. very effectively to not see what's obvious. And I think she can present more cogent in a controlled setting than she does probably when she's out in an uncontrolled setting and hallucinating and talking to the angel Moroni or Jesus or whatever.
Yes. Oh, that would be a weird world to be in Lori Vallow's head. Although she wants to be Lori Daybell. I want to talk about that too for a second, because very early on in this hearing, she requested, can we change the verbiage of my name to just be Lori Daybell, not Lori Vallow Daybell? Which is interesting to me, because that shows that she's standing by her man, Chad, who did throw her under the bus during his trial.
Yeah.
I have no idea if they have communication, if they're able to have communication, but what does that say to you about her reaction to his trial?
Loyalty, and obviously still believes that, you know, he's a wonderful guy and she wants that marriage to continue. And I guess in her belief system and their belief system in the afterlife, they're all going to be together. I don't know what happens with their former spouses mm-hmm. in the afterlife, but you know, maybe there'll be one big happy family.
They'll have a Diddy party and it'll be great. All right, let's wrap up there. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're neck deep in a dark, twisted tale. And just as the tension peaks, bam, a commercial about some miracle diet pill breaks the spell. It's like finding a fly in your soup after the first bite. But here's the fix. True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. You get to enjoy your crime stories without the junk. Ad-free episodes, extended interviews that go beyond the surface, and early access to all the gruesome details. It's like swapping out a can of cheap beer for a glass of fine whiskey. So search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and keep the darkness flowing uninterrupted.